I successfully moved. And let me tell you, it ain't easy.
She's a big girl. She's in her big girl apartment.
I got an apartment and I feel like I've rigged something because it's a pretty good deal and it's a one bedroom.
I just got the tour over FaceTime and I'm very impressed and I'm very jealous.
Yeah. I'm shocked it ever happened. I was really doing some like back channel investigating, trying to find apartments. Cause in New York, like you can't just go, you can't go on Street Easy. Like people say, oh, go on Street Easy. No, like if you want a rent stabilized apartment, you call random numbers in the phone book. Like you were not on Street Easy. So that's what I did. And here I am. And I love my little landlord. He's so lovely. He put in blinds for me.
To love your landlord is really a feat.
It's truly crazy because my last landlord was like a damn ghoul. He was just kind of like, you know, we moved in like 3 days early or something and he charged us for the 3 days, which I know it's like, okay, yes, technically that is his money. But like, I feel like a lot of like small time landlords would be like, okay, yeah, and just be like nice about it because it's more about like tenant landlord relationship than it is about money.
Yeah, like I feel like it's more about like the long term investment of like knowing that this person will want to like stay living in this place.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know. And my last place was just like had the craziest turnover. All these like 21-year-olds would just move in. They're all socially maladapted and just like it just sucked. I hated it. And yeah, he was awful. I got like locked out of my apartment because there was this miscommunication with like the broker and the keys. And then I had to pay $600 to the locksmith who obviously was scamming me, but it was like 1 a.m. And then my landlord refused to like reimburse me or like help me out with it. And I was like, so you just crazy. Are the worst. Like, so those types of people, I'm like really glad not to be dealing with him anymore, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to feel like you're just like a source of income. Like you want someone to respect the fact that you're a human being living in this place.
You don't want your landlord to be like, if you died, that would just be like annoying for them, you know? Like, you,
yeah, they're
you
like, oh God, sad. Now I have to like clean up the crime scene. Ugh.
Okay. Yeah. He like, we met him once and my roommate was having a hard time. She like cried to him because the radiator was really loud and he was so mean to her. And it was like, oh, because he doesn't have to be nice. Ultimately, there's so much demand, no. So little supply.
You're at their mercy. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm so happy. Every single part of my body aches and hurts. Like I hired movers, but I also kind of moved myself where I was kind of bringing up my miscellaneous things that I just didn't want to pack in boxes. And I cannot tell you, like my sciatic nerve, she's squealing. She's not happy. My whole butt hurts, you know?
You're a self-sufficient lady, for better or for worse.
For better or for worse, I've been drilling. Like, I feel great. It's really awesome. I've, like, mounted everything in a day. I spent, like, a whole day just unpacking and mounting, and it felt so satisfying. Like, I was like, I'm every woman, you know?
I do feel like I've reached, like, grown woman status when I own a drill and know how to use it.
You can definitely drill, Hannah, darling. Hannah, you're good with your hands. And I guess that's what drilling requires.
Right. Sure. That's what they say.
Hand dexterity.
Yes, of course. Thank you for your confidence in me.
Does a drill count as a power tool? Let us know in the chat.
It is. Like, because it requires power, isn't it? Yeah.
I guess so, but then there's we can't get into the weeds of this.
Is this
I don't
how
know.
We're opening the season? Is a drill a power tool?
Okay, yeah. So it's the beginning of the season. This hiatus, I feel like, was not as long as our last ones. I know that we always promise it'll be shorter and shorter and then it always gets longer. But I feel like it's hard for me to feel like our last season ended a long time ago because we do the bonus episodes in between seasons. And so it feels like we just recorded, but actually probably our last season ended a while ago.
And we also start researching like ahead of time. So it's not like we're just kind of like twiddling our thumbs or whatever in between.
True. But by the time this little ditty comes out, probably it's going to be quite a while after we just spoke. Like I would have been fully moved in and lounging about and you would never know.
The scarf I'm knitting presently will be a full scarf and not half a scarf by the time this comes out, likely.
Yeah, it'll go from a baby scarf to an adult scarf. Hannah's been knitting while we talk. She asked permission.
I asked permission. I swear I'm listening. I'm an active listener.
Yeah. Yes.
Two birds, one stone.
I'm trying to get back into watching movies. I've been trying to go to one every Tuesday, if not more times a week. And I'm about to see the new PTA movie. I'm actually pretty excited about it. I've heard good things.
I have to see when that's coming out here. Everything comes out later here. It's really annoying in the UK.
Yeah, things do. Well, if it makes you feel better, Dracula, like Luc Besson did a rendition of Dracula that looks very similar to Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, and like I want to see it because I want to write about it, but I fucking can't because it came out only in France.
What?
I wonder if Luc Besson's like banned in other places.
Oh, but also France has rules where things have to show in theaters before they go on to streaming. So if like let's say it struck up a screening or a streaming deal somewhere else, it would still have to probably play in France, and that's probably why.
I mean, yeah, but I'd want it to come out in theaters elsewhere, not on streaming. Like, I know. It hasn't even had like a box office run.
It probably wouldn't if it wasn't for France. It probably would have zero. It probably.
I feel like they're good at protecting their art. Let us know, because every time we talk about Europe, all the Europeans are like, you don't even know. Like, Europe sucks. So I'm sure you guys will have something to say. But
yes, I won't romanticize Europe any longer.
Sorry for romanticizing Europe, but Luc Besson, I don't know. I want to see it. I love Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. But yeah, it's spooky season.
I recently had my annual rewatch of Interview with the Vampire, and it's always a funny movie because I'll always like watch it with people who haven't seen it, and I'll be like, it's just this fun, silly, campy vampire movie, and then I forget how like violent and like sexual and like kind of strange it is.
Interview with the Vampire is not camp at all. I guess the end when he's like, stop whining, Louis, then
no,
you're like, that's
Tom Cruise is camp from start to finish. Like, he's ridiculous.
He's like,
he's like so silly, so unserious the entire movie. And then Brad Pitt is so serious and brooding that that's also kind of campy. And then Kirsten Dunst is like acting like a little, like a grown woman, but she's like 11 years old and she's like yelling at Tom Cruise. Like, it is camp, but there's just also so much kind of gratuitous, like weird.
No, I know Brad Pitt's like buckle fat ass face, like his buckle fat removal looking like cheekbones are so funny. Well, I watched a video with Kirsten Dunst recently where she was talking about how her experience on that set was apparently amazing, and like, well, she said it was like really arduous, but that Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, which is so funny because these two men are like some of the most like problematic men in Hollywood at the moment, but like apparently they were amazing to her. They treated her really well, and she was like, aww. She felt very like protected on set, and the director was very like, who's I can't remember
Neil Jordan, Irish.
Neil Jordan. Apparently Neil Jordan was like, she had like a specific acting coach that would help her understand kind of how to be an adult without actually like exposing her to like adult concepts.
Her performance is like, I just rewatched it, and every time I'm like struck by how good it is. Like, it's actually maybe the best performance I've seen of her in her career. She's phenomenal in it.
A Star Is Born, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she said that like when she had to look sexy, the acting coach was like, just look like you have, like, they wouldn't say, oh, look sexy. They'd be like, just look like you have like a secret. You have it, but you don't want to tell anyone. Like, they were kind of, yeah. But the character, oh my God, it's such a good movie. It's fucking good.
So good. And her outfits are amazing. And now I kind of have hair like hers. I was like, I could be her for Halloween, but probably not enough people would like appreciate it.
That would be weirdly similar to your whatever happened Baby to Baby Jane outfit. Like, strangely similar.
A movie where, to me, it's not obscure at all. And, like, to the right people, not obscure at all. But
you mean
to
the people.
Yeah. But to Halloween parties, I'm, like, having to constantly explain it. And then I'm like, this is way too much work and effort for something that people don't get. The Baby Jane one was especially bad because I also looked horrible.
It's true. But no, you didn't look horrible. Wait. No. You didn't look horrible. You looked amazing.
I looked scary.
Oh, no. God forbid.
But I just felt like I was wearing a lot of, like, wig and makeup and whatnot to not have anyone really not just be like, oh, I didn't know you were Baby Jane. Just be like, I don't know that movie. And I was like, well, this is annoying.
Sorry, everyone's uncultured. That's on them.
Yeah.
I don't know what to be this year. I'm fretting.
I'm going to be Carrie Bradshaw.
I think I'm just going to be an elf again. I've really lost my lust for Halloween. I think in university, I was doing like 3 costumes like every Halloween. And I think it just got fatigued.
They don't do that here. Everyone's like, yeah, Halloween's not here. Like, in England, it's not like it is in North America. And that's no fun because I was ready to plan like 3 costumes.
They don't do Hallow's Eve. Sorry, I really have to stop doing my accents.
They're really funny. I love them. Never stop.
Thank you. Well, I'm Maya.
And I'm Hannah.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the internet phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about communication on the internet. Online, we may have shot the shit, but have we also shot the messenger? If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us out a lot. This episode is about something we all do, maybe except Hannah, but swear that we never do. It's like a collective dirty secret we all seem to be hiding. Today, we're talking about creeping, which is the act of visiting someone's online profiles to gain information about them, which can range from a simple scroll down their Instagram grid to much more complex activities. I'm excited for this episode because I think it's actually really cathartic to talk about this kind of thing out in the open, and I want to use it as an opportunity to ask whether creeping is actually as creepy as the name suggests, and whether or not this is a healthy behavior. So to kick off this juicy topic, I asked our listeners to spill about their relationships to creeping. I posted like a story about it, whether or not they do it, what their methods are, and, you know, if they have any crazy stories about it. There was a range, like a lot of people just basically disclosed that they had fake accounts that they stalked people from. But some of you were truly diabolical, like Ingrid Goes West type shit. It was awesome. It was so fun. Like, I was like, oh my God, the vulnerability is incredible. So Hannah, we're going to do like a rapid fire round. I just want to take turns reading each of these aloud. They're all pretty short. Hannah, you go first.
Okay. I stalk my therapist's Goodreads account. Incredible.
I love to figure out where people live. I love to screenshot their backgrounds and image search. I am a cam girl and very serious about my safety. It's fun to see how dumb people can be. LOL.
Three words for you. Vinted, Spotify, Strava. I didn't know you could follow people on Vinted.
It's so cool.
What? Why? What's the point?
Well, what do you think? We'll find out. Pinterest is often a very fruitful source, but also feels the most embarrassing for the creeper.
Oh, I have my entire Pinterest on, like, private for that reason, because my Pinterest... Actually, I don't even want any of you to try and find my Pinterest... My
Pinterest.
Pinterest. Stalked my now ex's ex on Spotify and found out they were still sharing songs.
That was, like, when I found out my high school boyfriend. I found out that he was, like, kind of... emotionally cheating on me because he had a snap streak with this other girl that I was worried about. Like, they beat our snap streak.
Me too. And he left me for her.
If you type any detail about someone on Google, you can find them. Anyway, found random people from the street who were hot that way.
Crazy. When I dated a guy who then told me he sees me as his sister, and a few years later, I went on his IG profile and liked one of his first posts because he was kind of hot, plus I was feeling lonely, and my IG crashed and I accidentally liked his old ass post.
I've done this.
Yes.
Anytime I like a guy, I try to find his mom on Facebook because I know she'll have all the tea.
I have like 200 people blocked because I like to look at their stories, haha. I also like to use Instagram Anonymous when I don't feel like unblocking people. What's Instagram Anonymous?
I don't know. There's so many different little apps that you can get that shroud your identity.
I see.
Had a parasocial crush on a girl I followed on Tumblr who used a fake name. So I went through the follows of an artist she was friends with on Insta till I found her and found out her real name and where she lives and her real life friends, etc. Didn't do anything, of course.
You can for real learn everything about someone by their Venmo history. Oh my God, you guys.
I think it's crazy for everyday people to have their IG accounts public and then they comment something rude and I can just click on their account and see where their kid goes to school.
I creeped on a crush, showed my mom a pic from 2014, and she accidentally posted it to her Facebook where a bunch of me and the crush's mutuals saw it. Fuck, that sucks.
So brutal. LinkedIn to see their job. Google for address. Sometimes even Spotify. Need to know. I like that one.
For their address?
Duh.
I creep on my compulsive liar ex-roommate to see if people have figured it out yet. Fair Real. Enough.
Stalked my girlfriend's ex daily. Turned out she was stalking me back. Yes, BPD lesbians.
Yes.
The BPD community is big on the like, this shit.
Well, yes. Instagram story viewer, white pages, and the Wayback Machine to view deleted accounts. Shit. Ex-friend used poor security of Gmail accounts to wipe my whole Google Drive out of spite. What the fuck?
Insane. One time I found Phoebe Bridgers' parents' divorce record, which led me to find her grandmother's obituary and childhood address. That's the last time I went to Google page two.
Oh my god. In university, I had an entire anonymous second feminist-themed Instagram, which I used. It worked really well on girlies who had private accounts. They always accepted my follow. Evil!
It's like performative Evil. Lesbian or something. The performative lesbian.
Oh my god.
I once signed someone, in brackets, enemy, up for the Scientology newsletter. I don't know if that counts. But
that's amazing, though. That's actually so fucking genius.
So fucking funny.
Yeah.
So we've got a little bit of everything here. We've got people wanting to know more about celebrities or micro-celebrities. We have people looking at their crushes, holding people accountable for bad behavior, safety checks, provocation of their enemies, on a very, very wide array of platforms. So I'm sure you might be wondering then, what actually is creeping? Also known as web sleuthing, lurking, surveillance, and cyber stalking, or just stalking. I usually say stalking, like, oh, I stalked her Insta, you know.
So I creep, yeah, just keep it on the down low. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I read this 2020... just keep going. So I read this 2021 study which describes creeping as what they call social information seeking, which distinguishes itself from other types of information seeking because it involves an individual intentionally looking for personal data about another person, and that usually this is driven by the desire to reduce uncertainty about that person or what they represent. In communication studies, they call it uncertainty reduction theory. And typically this kind of social information seeking behavior is a very passive behavior where you're able to gather information about a person without speaking to them directly. They use the example of observing someone talking to other people at a party where you're like, oh, this is the kind of person they are based on what I've like overheard of them. But in the case of the internet, it's way more passive, obviously, because you can gather information from the comfort of your own home. You don't got to go to parties. Don't worry. Gen Z. Our followers hate when we do that. Hannah, I know what your answer is going to be, but based on all those anecdotes and the definition I just provided, can you tell us, do you creep?
No, I don't. Not really in the way that like majority of my friends do. I'm sure when I was younger, like maybe I would have made more of an effort to, but like not compared to some of the girlies I'm friends with. I wish I had like a good answer as to like why I don't. Like it's not really a moral thing. I think it's inherently a laziness thing and that I struggle to keep up with my like long distance relationships with people via text that I actually care about. And so I actually don't have any like attention span. Yeah.
Hannah sending me LOL to like, I send her like 20 messages and she goes, LOL. And then she'll respond to each message. Like she'll do the reply on iMessage and it'll just be like a single word response to each one and miss like three of the different messages that I sent. And I'm like, how dare you?
Yeah. I'm actually like really, really, really bad at keeping lines of communication open with people that I care about. So like, I actually just don't have it in my brain to enter a parasocial relationship with someone online. I don't know. I think I spent a lot of time in my early 20s really limiting my Instagram usage, and I'm definitely on it more now. But I would say, like, I make an effort to not check who's viewed my stories. I often don't go through who's liked my photos. I just don't want to be thinking about people in that way. And so I just feel like once I start thinking about creeping other people, then I think about myself being creeped, and like I don't really like that side of it. I don't know. I think I'm just also like an old woman on social media. I think
you're just like kind of uncurious about certain things. Like you just don't really you kind of are. Like you just have to know, you're not like wanting to know, you know. Or you just have really good willpower.
I think part of it is a willpower thing, especially with my stories. But I do think like, so I have done really intensive research online. I've had this like ongoing research project about my grandfather who I never met. I've been looking for his art, and I've also been looking to fill in sort of blanks about his life, like things I don't know. I really tried to find his like second wife. I was creeping up women like on Facebook that had her name in Toronto, trying to find her. And then I approached one of the women in a Tim Hortons being like, are you this person? And she was like, no, LOL. So like I have the capacity to creep, but I think I honestly just like nobody's like that important to me in that sense that I need to keep tabs on them unless they're in my life, and then I already know what's going on. Like
this is one of those things that Hannah is so baffled by. Like if I ever do this, she's like, what? Like you want to do that? Why? It's like one of the things that you think no one's doing this, but then you're so baffled when you find out everyone's doing it.
Yeah, I guess so. So but I know a lot of my friends do it, and it's impressive. They're really impressive about it.
I think when you're like anxious about someone you're dating and you want to know, or like you've recently been broken up with, and we're going to get into this more, but like you can find out who that person is seeing currently just by going to their following. And like I've done this. We'll talk about it. Doesn't feel good, but it's definitely like a curiosity killed the cat kind of thing. Like I feel very, I'm nosy. Like I think you're not very nosy. Like I feel like I'm quite nosy. And I respect, like you're not really like a gossip.
I see. I'm a gossiping like person. And if I'm in someone's room, I do want to go through all their stuff. Like don't get me wrong, but I don't also just saying, but I do have a team of girlies such as Maya who I can technically deploy to go and seek and find this information on my behalf.
Oh, I will find it. I will find it. We have some friends who will. They have like, they should be fucking hired by the FBI or CSIS or whatever Canada has.
CSIS.
Okay, well, yeah, I know this about my dear Hannah.
Honestly, I do think it's like a little bit embarrassing of me. It's just one of my...
It's not embarrassing!
I do think it's really
more embarrassing to creep people.
No, everybody does it. Everybody does it.
Yeah, but it's shameful. It's a great shame. Like people don't talk about it openly. It's like embarrassing. Like people. Well, and we'll talk about why it's embarrassing. But I am also I am a creeper. I love to creep. I find it very enjoyable sometimes, and sometimes I find it really devastating. Because I find information that I didn't actually want to know or like wasn't good for me. There also have been instances where I'll learn something about someone by creeping their profile and then like mention it to them in person, forgetting that it's something that they've never told me about, and then have to kind of like lie on the spot, like when they're like, oh, where'd you hear that? Like, did I tell you that? You know, I also have like accidentally liked people's photos when you're creeping. Like this would be someone I don't even care about, and I'll accidentally like their photo, and you're like, oh, this makes it look like I'm like obsessed, and I'm not.
Yeah.
I feel like creeping is my version of like doom scroll. Like I'm not really scrolling down my explore page. Like I'm not really like scrolling down reels and stuff, but I do find just kind of like being nosy my version of that, like my brain rot.
I actually think that that's like a more productive or personalized version, because I do doom scroll, and that's like a big waste of my time.
Interesting. Okay, well, yeah, and we'll talk about whether or not this is activating inside your brain. But first, there was this Norton report that came out a couple years ago, which found that Gen Z and millennials, so people ages 18 to 42, had what they refer to as concerningly relaxed attitudes about online stalking. A disproportionate number of people in this age group said that they didn't care if they were stalked online by a current or former partner, so long as they weren't being stalked in person. Why do you think they answer that? Like, what? Why are we so loosey-goosey?
I think it's because we have had our entire lives on social media. Like, we've put so much out there to be consumed. I don't know. I think it's that thing where when I was in high school, people were always like, oh, you should be careful what you post on Facebook because future employers will look at it, or, you know, universities. And I think I remember having a very lax attitude about it back then because I was just like, but everybody's doing it. It just feels like this is an extension of our lives now. And it feels like such a vital part of our social lives that it feels really weird to like have this very clean cut social media presence. It kind of felt like antithetical to the purpose of social media, like to have it be so kind of prim and like shut down, I guess.
The idea is to share like they want you to share
your life. I was like, of course I'm going to share this photo of me with like a red Solo cup in my hands because I want people to think I'm cool. I don't know. I think maybe we just know that it's inevitable. We're very aware of the fact that you can find anything on the internet. And then I guess like most of us are also doing it to other people. Yeah. Like most people are also keeping tabs on other people. It just sort of feels like it's fair game. Ultimately, I mean, like what counts as stalking and like creeping, you know, it varies, right? So if it's something that's actually not meant for public consumption at all, I think I'm sure more people would have more like hesitations about that. But anything that's on like a public profile, it's even sometimes hard to even call that stalking because it's there. It's not something you have to look for.
I agree. Like, I think that, I don't know, that whole stranger danger era of the internet just really dissipated. Like, you know, thinking back to those early episodes of Degrassi, The Next Generation, which are all about stranger danger. Like, that was kind of the topic du jour for when we were, like, young kids.
The amount of, like, after-school specials we'd watch in school for that, yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think you kind of start feeling like an old fuddy-duddy even talking about that kind of thing now because it feels like there were so many PSAs. It was almost like a top-down schooling about this. It feels kind of like when people talk about phone addiction, like, it just kind of elicits an eye roll, even though, like, it's fully true we are so fucking addicted to our phones. But it's like, ugh! Like, it's very old man yells at cloud, even though it shouldn't be. I don't. I also feel like I agree. I think we're just lax about our personal information being on the internet, either because we like trust these tech companies more, or because we know that we don't own that information anymore anyways. I do think it's like a mixture of those things. I also think it's us being too reliant on and like addicted to the internet to really care is the likeliest answer, because it's like it is just our whole lives now.
I agree. I think that's sort of the gist of it. I think it's become this thing where we're like, the cat's out of the bag. Not the cat's out of the bag. You can't. It's like you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, you know?
Oh. Kind of like the cat's out of the bag. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I've never heard the toothpaste in the tube, though.
It's just like it's already out. Like we can't undo this thing where our lives are so prevalent on the internet. And like there is so much documentation of our existence on the internet. Like we've already kind of started that. And we started it from a young enough age where we didn't really have like the foresight to really reflect on whether or not we wanted that.
Yeah.
So at this point, totally. It's sort of like, I've been doing this since I was 14. I've been posting online. It feels weird to suddenly be all like weird about it.
Well, our digital footprints, are just so robust. They're so far reaching. Like I just did, and this is actually not a sponsored thing I'm about to say, but like, I just did the sponsorship for my last video with like Incogni, which is a company that basically finds information that was released about you all over the internet and like sold by data brokers. Like our information is just literally everywhere.
Yeah,
it's really hard to get it back unless you're using some sort of service like Incogni that's like deleting stuff for you, but it's like almost impossible to know where your information has gone when you release that information. Like it's just being digital natives, it's just also out there. Also, like, I don't know, I do wonder, I didn't fully read the entire study, but I kind of wonder what their definition of stalking was, because stalking is also such a colloquial term now. I don't know. I'm sure they specified. I do think this would be a good opportunity to say that creeping and actual stalking are not the same thing. Like, first, I think the word stalking, like I said, has become synonymous with creeping, which I'm sure has diminished its severity over time. But while the report outlines some actual serious stalking behaviors as being, like, the use of stalkerware and creepware apps that allow you to monitor someone's phone activities, there's this psychologist named Emma Short who says that actual cyberstalking is basically when an individual becomes aware of you gaining information about them, and that the information is used to make them feel uncomfortable or afraid, kind of like baby reindeer style. Yeah. So I'd say creeping is distinguished more by its passivity. And once it becomes more active is when it starts to qualify as stalking, which is definitely a slippery slope.
When you're creeping, the point is to stay anonymous. Like, the point is to make the fact that you're creeping never come to light. And that's why it's so humiliating when you accidentally like someone's old photos.
Yeah, there's no like kind of end goal to somehow make contact with that person. It's more like it kind of like you got the information, it stays in your brain, and then you kind of just move on is kind of what it is. But it is a slippery slope. But regardless, Hannah, what do you think? Is creeping inherently creepy? Even if it's passive, not actual stalking?
I think that I would be going against all of the down bad girlies of the 21st century if I said it was inherently and across the board creepy to keep tabs on people on social media, because anyone who's had a crush that they like don't know much about, or like someone that they met at a party, has had that instinct to at the very least find their Instagram profile, but then like, you know, maybe go further because you're trying to like fill in these blanks. And I think we have access at our fingertips to all this information about people who we haven't even really gotten to know yet, in a way that I guess people before didn't have, but probably would have utilized it if they did, you know? So it's like the things a girly with like an intense crush will do, those things eat up your brain. They give you like, they're like a parasite.
It's me trying to break into One Direction's tour bus, you know? Like, it's there's something inherent about it. There's something like, how much of it is just like endemic to like human behavior, I guess. Being moody doesn't have to be a bad thing. Sometimes it can be fun to lean into how we're feeling by surrounding ourselves with things that match that feeling. Our moods play a big role in our choice of music, food, even lighting. So why not extend that logic to cannabis products? This is possible thanks to our sponsor, Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC products right to your door. Gummies that only get you high? That's so passé. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. And with our promo code REHASH, you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, sleepy time to get you settled for a restful night, or chill out for some needed relaxation. THC gummies are everywhere these days, so why not go with a brand that lets you customize your experience? Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. The best part is, Mood ships directly and discreetly to your door. That means no more waiting in dispensary lines, and no risk of an awkward run-in with your mom's friend Mary. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code REHASH. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code REHASH when you check out to save 20% off your first order. I don't know. Yeah, I do have like mixed feelings about this. I found this Reddit post that I thought was really interesting, where essentially OP was saying that it's crazy that people would find someone else viewing their social profiles to be creepy when the whole point of social media is to be seen. And they talk about older social sites where they're like, we had web pages with content we had written that we wanted as many people as possible to see. We didn't spend all those hours perfecting JavaScript, mouse trailers, and visitor counters and guest books for nothing, you know. On these web pages, we might have listed all sorts of borderline personally identifying information, or in some cases, all of it. And then they go, maybe they want their Facebook, like they're talking about the people who find creeping creepy. Maybe they want their Facebook to be like their high school bedroom that they've decorated with posters of Ricky Martin, and they have a little diary where they bitch about their poor, tragic suburban lives, and nobody else is allowed in there. And if you go in and look at their photos or remember too specifically their words, you're a terrible creep. Except instead of a bedroom, they have erected a large bulletin board in the town square. And I thought this invited this like really fascinating question about the purpose of a social media profile. Like, is it the bedroom wall or is it the town square bulletin board? What do you think? And do you think maybe this has like changed over time?
Well, I think when we were on Facebook in high school, it was like the only people I was going to have on Facebook were people that I knew and people from high school and other teenagers. And the world felt so small. And then I always felt very weird having family members on Facebook because I was absolutely just posting stuff for an audience of my peers. And I think that that was always like a funny thing to think about when I posted on Facebook. But it did feel like an extension more so of your bedroom because it felt kind of safe. Like it felt confined even though it wasn't. Like, there's something about Facebook that kind of feels like there's walls up around it, even though there's absolutely not. Whereas Instagram, that feels like a bulletin board. That feels like, if you have a public Instagram account, which I do, I'm like, I know that anybody is going to look at anything I post. So I have to either accept that or be very conscious about what I'm posting, because it's just, it's there. And I don't know, I was seeing someone who doesn't have Instagram, and after our first date, or even before, he'd like told me he looked me up, like he Googled me and found stuff, you know, that I like, things I'd partook in, you know, the podcast, also my Instagram, all this stuff. And I was like, why did you do that? And he was like, but it's there, it's online, you did it. And I was like, yeah, totally. It's true, it's not wrong. But I mean, one, I hated the fact that he wasn't on Instagram, and so I couldn't necessarily reciprocate.
Yeah.
And also, it was like, I know it's there, but part of me does feel like, as technology changes and as like the places where we spend our time online shift and change, I kind of sometimes, I guess in my head, feel like my older versions of myself that I guess there's still documentation of online are things that I get to leave in the past the way I would a past self. And I know that that's a bit naive, and maybe I shouldn't have been framing my thinking that way. But also, I think it's respectful to maybe allow people to have that kind of separation.
No, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a really similar thing in dating. Like, the last person I dated, you know, I have like a pretty widespread internet presence. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have any, like, I didn't know his Instagram. He wouldn't tell me, like, I didn't know his last name. Like, I just didn't know anything about him. I just had his first name, which I wanted to keep it at, because I prefer not really, if it's like a Hinge kind of thing, I don't want to know much about someone until I actually get to know them. Like, I want to curb my instinct to creep, because yeah, I'd rather be more organic. But on my Hinge, I had, like, my name, and then I had like film critic on there, which I don't call myself that anymore. It's so annoying. I don't think I am a film critic really by definition, but he just looked up my first name and film critic, and I came up, and he searched like everything. And it's like, I didn't want to talk about my job. I really don't like talking about it. And I really don't like talking about it, especially on a date. I'd rather tell someone about that way later. And I felt a little violated. Like, I couldn't be mad at him, because he was like, yeah, like exactly like your person said, like it is out there. But
yeah.
I didn't offer up that information in person. But then it's like, I can't even talk, because I would have gone and found information about him. And I did. Not a ton of information, but, you know, I would have tried my best. And so it's hard to be like mad at someone when they do that, because it is natural. But it is like, oh, I just wish you didn't. Especially in a dating context.
Well, yeah. And I just think there's like a scope of like, I don't know. I understand being curious, but then it's also like, I guess I do feel like, I know I was just saying like, oh, we're all used to and like accepting of the idea that we're being technically creeped online all the time, and like we're putting stuff out there. And I don't mind my current iterations of my like internet presence being subject to that. But there's something about like, I don't know, your old former self that it feels really strange to have that.
Well, when you're not offering it up, like I'd rather show someone myself than have them see it. It depends though. So you were saying, you know, differences between Facebook and Instagram, and there's actually a word for this. So something I learned actually back in school, I did this like kind of like tech related class. I can't remember the name of it now. Basically, we learned in that class this idea of affordances, which are basically the properties of an object that allow the user of that object to take specific actions. The affordances, for example, of social media are really wide ranging. They afford like accessibility, anonymity, replicability. So like you can copy, like you can screenshot something and put it somewhere else. Visibility, searchability. But what they all lend to, like what they afford for us, is this ability and instinct to creep. Like they are kind of, it's like almost built, like there's a built-in mechanism to social media that kind of asks people to do that to varying degrees. So yeah, I do think that there is like a nosiness that's inherent to human nature. And I think to an extent, snooping can no longer be regarded as creepy across the board, because there are these built-in mechanisms to these platforms that are so prevalent in our lives. But I agree with what a lot of the responses to that original, that like Reddit post were saying, which is that it does depend on the effort that someone is putting in. Like, how far back are you going? Like, you're a person going back all the way to like old photos of you. How are you using the information you obtained? Like, this guy telling you to your face that he did that and like making you feel a bit weird or uncomfortable when he maybe he could have done it and just kind of kept it to himself, like more passively.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. Many of us do it, but it's, you know, when you bring it to someone, it makes them feel kind of weird. But I think it's hard for people to agree on this question of creeping being creepy, because social media sites are considered what they call mass personal channels of communication. So there's the like blended elements of the interpersonal and the mass media. Like, you know, you have like your friends, you're posting to your followers, you're posting what you ate for dinner. But then there's the mass media element where if you have a public profile, like anyone can go see that. And I think the term perfectly kind of encapsulates this tension between someone putting information out there and creeping being considered creepy, because mass and personal are just really contradictory concepts.
Yeah.
I think as the affordances of social media platforms change, so does our ability to or desire to creep. Like on Facebook, your contacts are called friends who you have to accept in order for them to view most of your profile. There were a lot of like options for like what would be out there to someone who isn't your friend. And so there's more of like an interpersonal element there. It's a bit more of like a networking thing. But on Instagram, they're called followers, and you're like a mini celebrity. And if you have a public Instagram, then like anyone can look at your stuff, like you're saying, regardless of whether or not they follow you. So there are many reasons for why we creep people, some of which we've already discussed. There's the passive part. You know, we get to skip that social step of getting to know someone in order to gain information about them. Some people do what they call professional stalking, which is basically figuring out how someone got to the career that they're in, like almost like doing research or like trying to emulate someone closely in your field. There's the sleuthing element. So like people digging up information typically in order to like, you know, safeguard themselves. You know, if you're going on a date, for example, and you want to know if this person's real, or on the flip side, to make someone else unsafe. So like to dox. And obviously that falls more into stalking. Then there's a major element of voyeurism at play. One person in an article I was reading said that they had always felt like an outsider in the LGBT community. So they would creep in order to live vicariously through people who were living what they call idealized gay lifestyles. And I really wonder, like going back to that bonus episode we did about best dressed a very long time ago, which you can find on our Patreon, shameless plug.
If you creep our Patreon.
Yes, exactly. Do you think that whole idea of the demotic turn applies here? So for context, the demotic turn is this theory by Graham Turner, which is about how new media has produced ordinary people as celebrities. He wrote it back in 2009, so he was mostly referring to reality TV. But we see it become more and more of a thing with influencers going from regular people to celebrities in their own right, for example. So I'm wondering if the demotic turn even applies to creeping.
I think that like the demotic turn is sort of more about like these industries like taking unprepared and like not unsuspecting, but like people who are technically like to some degree like consensually agreeing to like participate in sort of like a star making process. So like influencers, that makes sense because it's like regular people who are amassing and like tending to followings, or like, you know, maybe someone going viral would be an example of it. But I think with creeping, I guess maybe it's this idea that we're all treating social media now like we're like influencers, like we're speaking to a following. But I don't necessarily think that that's how most people I know actually use Instagram. I think, I mean, personally, I still use, even though my following has become slightly more made up of like people I don't know personally, I still kind of use my Instagram like it's just my normal Instagram.
Well, me too, mostly. Yeah.
Like I post as if I'm posting to my friends. I keep it. It's like feels more like a private profile, even though it's like technically not. But I don't necessarily like, I don't know. It's hard to say because it's like I don't necessarily think that the demotic turn fully like applies here. But I would love to hear your theory if you had.
Well, yeah, I guess I wasn't looking at it from the perspective of like people's intentions about what they're posting on their profiles, and more like the people who are creeping. Like, I think when it's distilled even more down to like, okay, well, from a more entertainment perspective, like we are using, you know, these influencers as a source of entertainment, and distilled even more here, it's like we're using regular people as a source of entertainment.
True.
We're like completely private citizens who are not even influencers, not viral, become like private celebrities to us. People that will stalk regularly because we want to emulate them, like this person stalking people who are living these idealized gay lifestyles, or stalking people because you wish you had that job. Like it feels kind of like an even more like microcosmic example of to me a little bit the demonic turn. I don't think it's like a one-to-one comparison, obviously, but I do think I found that kind of interesting.
I get what you're saying. I think that makes sense. I think to me it feels more in line with gossip, where, you know, thinking about like pre-internet era or whatever, like communities or towns or whatever, there'd be people who were more like subject to gossip or like whose antics would kind of be followed more closely. You'd have whisper networks about different things. And I think that in a way, those people end up becoming, like you're saying, like mini celebrities within these smaller contexts. And it's one normal person closely watching the behaviors of like another normal person online feels maybe just more like an evolution of that, where, you know, we already had those instincts, but we didn't necessarily have the resources to fully like actualize them to the extent that we have now, which, you know, like maybe back in the day, like a bunch of like ladies chit-chatting about one another in the salon, like if they had access to someone's Instagram, they would have done exactly what girls are doing in their group chats today, you know?
Yeah, it's like Snoopy, more interpersonal.
Yeah, because I don't necessarily know if when we're like stalking someone online, if that's us treating them like a celebrity in the traditional sense so much as it is just like an object of fascination. Somebody's behaviors, what someone does, like their life just has become really fascinating. But do you not think that
that's kind of what influencers are to us? Like lifestyle influencers, we do just kind of want to know what they're up to. Like they're not doing much else other than giving us an insight, like vloggers, for example, into their lives. And so we are kind of like,
But I think influencers are also feeding us the illusion of a mutual relationship a bit more. They address the public, they address the audience, they're formatting things in a very specific way where we're not like filling in the blanks. They're kind of presenting a narrative to us that feels different than somebody who's posting more mundanely, and we're sort of trying to work out like, oh, what's in the background there? What's going on? Who are they with? You know?
Interesting. I mean, I do. Well, I mean, I think creeping can be applied to influencers too. Like, look at what happens with like Love Island people and like people listening to their phone calls in the background of a video. Like, I do think there's an element of snooping with influencers too. I don't necessarily agree. I do think there is an element of treating people we stalk as celebrities because I think there's a parasocial element to it, or there can be. This does lead me to my next section, but, you know, tying in this private celebrity idea that I'm thinking of, there's this writer named Morgan Sullivan who wrote this piece in The Cut that was a love letter to the Instagram accounts of her ex's exes, where she talks about how she routinely creeped the girls that her partners used to date long after she and that partner would break up. She says it was partly out of jealousy, but also partly out of curiosity. And, quote, they were the center of every fiction story I'd write in my mind, where I'd grant myself the answer to questions like, did they make my ex happier? Was the sex better? Which I think also plays into what you're saying about the like gossipiness. But do you think within that like uncertainty reduction idea, creeping can almost be considered a form of like controlling unknowns, like almost a way of coping with anxiety, at least in this concept?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I think that's probably one of the reasons that I tend to abstain from that kind of behavior is that I think we will do so much with the smallest nugget of information, especially when it's taken out of context. And while we think we're like soothing our anxieties, while we think we're trying to give ourselves peace of mind, I think that they feel them because once you've kind of got that first bit, it's just gonna snowball.
Because you'll never know everything.
Exactly. And like most of the time, the context, the story behind something is innocuous. It's not interesting. It's not going to like reveal anything. Like most of the time we're reading into things, and so I think that like it is this sort of way to feed our anxieties that we think is like soothing them. And I think we always think that knowledge is, you know, like it's better to know something than to not know something, but
it often is better not to know. Yeah, I think part of it is what she's saying, like we think we need that information to put ourselves at ease, but then also that doesn't fully account for what happens when like she no longer has a romantic stake in these women, which I find interesting. Like, you know, she's not really asking like, oh, was the sex better with them when she's also broken up with this guy? And so there's a writer named Laura Pitcher who has this amazing piece from a couple years ago where she references Sullivan's article and refers to this phenomenon as the parasocial other woman, which I was like, this is watershed. This is amazing. And she basically talks about, she talks a lot about this, like, coming from a place of insecurity because women are so often placed in competition with one another. She also touches on the voyeurism aspect where, like, looking up exes is a form of, like, keeping up with the Joneses, kind of. Like, just basic curiosity, wanting to emulate someone, which I think kind of ties into the influencer element a bit. When I'm trying to think of, like, what's fashionable or, like, I'm trying to think of an outfit I want to wear, like, I'm not looking up influencers, like, I'm looking up, like, other girls in my orbit who I think are fashionable, and to me they're kind of like mini celebrities. Like, if I were to meet them, I'd be like, hey, sometimes it's girls I don't even know, but they're kind of like tangentially related, and I'm like, ooh. And then I meet them in person and I'm like, whoa, I've stalked you so many times. She also talks about how this kind of creeping is routinized. And the routine part really struck me because as someone who also does this, there are, like, exes that I have from, like, years ago who I still stalk their exes. Like, I'm like, what's she up to, you know? I think that creeping, especially, like, women who you feel both in competition with but also curious about, can be super addictive. Like, I do think we're getting little rushes of dopamine from super basic information collection. Can you imagine, like, what about it feels so stimulating, I guess?
Well, one, it's like we love to compare ourselves to each other. Like, we love to fuel that fire. I think part of it is sort of like there's something masochistic about it because it is sort of a way to keep tabs on somebody in a way that is like confirming things we feel about ourselves. I think it's just like if you're feeling insecure about things, you're going to look to someone for reference. You're also filling the position of somebody. Like, there's a bit of, like, a doubles thing going on there. There's a bit of, like, an identity sort of David Lynch, like, we're turning into each other kind of
thing. The worst is when they kind of look like you and you're like, oh, no, I hate that.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that you'd be like, okay, well, we've both been with this person, so we must have some similarities to some capacity. And then you're like, well, what didn't work out with these two? And then what worked for them, but then maybe isn't working here? Like, I think it all makes sense. But I do think, again, it is bad for us. Like, I totally get it. And I think people become emotionally attached to these things. But it's like,
well, that's funny because this brings me to a question. Do you think there's an argument for creeping actually being a healthy activity?
I would actually be fascinated to hear someone's argument for it being a healthy activity, because I'm sure somebody could craft like a very convincing stance on that. But I think curiosity killed the cat. Like, that rings true today. Like, there is so much truth in that. And I do think that ultimately, like, when we've decided to creep someone, it's not because we're like feeling awesome about ourselves and our lives and we're just kind of doing it as a pastime a lot of the time. It's usually because we're feeling like shit, or maybe it's just compulsive.
I mean, but it's also, I do, like, it compulsively. It's like I could be feeling great and I'll still do it. Like, I'm very much of the parasocial kind of aspect of it more than anything.
But I also, it's like not necessarily always like super harmful or detrimental per se, but I don't know if it's good for you to be partaking in like a one-sided obsession with another person generally. But I don't know, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody has like a really healthy reason for doing it, and I would be very fascinated to hear it.
Well, there's like a couple things that I was thinking of that I don't know if healthy is the right word, but like I do think it's made things feel safer to a degree, especially as it pertains to dating. Like, I think personally I don't ever feel too terrified about going on a Hinge date these days, because like I can usually pretty easily find someone's information if I wanted to. I also think it can be a pretty interesting skill. Like, there's a lot of technological literacy and like deductive logic being applied here. The way that it's kind of activating your brain is interesting to me. One person who was interviewed by Vice said that they're a recruiter for an influencer marketing agency and that their creeping abilities became an actual like transferable skill, which made them really good at their job, because they were like, I was creeping all the time before I got hired. But, like, I also think on top of the potential for actual stalking, it is, like, a double-edged sword where, like you were saying, we do have this problem of overexposure, like, way too much information being available about people. And I think this can be harmful both in the sense that you can get a false impression of someone and idealize them in your head and get insecure, anxious. Like the amount of girls I know who look through, like I do, the following section of the guys they've started dating or recently broken up with to know exactly who he's talking to or dating is just wild. And most of the time it only brings them misery. Like sometimes ignorance really is bliss. So to end, I wanted to read out a submission from a listener that really stuck out to me because I thought it was really poignant and revealed a lot about the act of creeping and what it means to us and why we do it. Here's what they said. I have this now ex-best friend from middle school until now in our mid to late 20s. From 2022 until this May, we called each other maybe four nights a week and have worked on research projects together in both our master's and PhD programs. We currently still share a phone plan. We haven't talked in 5 months since she ghosted me after my cancer diagnosis. I keep saying this is the week I finally block and unfollow her on everything, but I don't. I've had her muted for months, but every week or so I search her accounts and watch her stories to see what she's up to. I look through the following tab to see what they've been getting into lately. I get texts maybe once a week from Verizon about a phone plan with someone who isn't in my life anymore. It's one of the first times I've felt haunted by someone, even though I still seek out and indulge that haunting. What do you make of this? First off, fuck that person.
Yeah, fuck that person. Fuck that person. That feels like, to me, definitely like less, oh, there's this girl who's sort of in my orbit or who's dated the same person as me and I'm keeping tabs on her because I'm insecure or jealous kind of way. And that to me is more like what people used to hire private investigators for. Because you just like need to know that someone exists. And like, I understand like they're in that position, like needing an answer.
People hire private investigators for all sorts of reasons, but yes.
This is very true. But this is like, this to me, I'm like, this is a reasonable thing where you would be, yes, obviously, you've been left with this big question mark with like no closure about something and also like are deeply hurt by someone. And I would say the other person's behavior is like far more insidious than like any quote unquote creeping in this situation, of course.
Well, I guess I'm not really asking whether or not it's reasonable in relation to everything else. Like I'm thinking about it more generally as it relates to the concept of creeping and like what it does to us.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously there's, like, variations in, like, what can be considered good or bad. I mean, I'm not, I think it's all over the map. But I personally think their use of the word haunted was really beautiful. Like, yeah. It feels like so much of what creeping is just, like, yearning or longing to varying extremes. And I do wonder how much creeping is stalling us from moving on in a way. In every way, like you're saying, you know, this one-sided obsession. How healthy can that be? Like, there is a sense of stagnation that social media already facilitates. Like, bedrot's going to be in the dictionary soon, if it isn't already, honestly. But also this, like, cultural passivity is something that I think about that a lot. I really want to write a book about it. And I think in many ways, these more parasocial forms of creeping make me really sad. Like, I totally understand this specific person's anecdote is, like, very heightened and tragic, and I totally understand their desire to creep their friends, and I think in a way that's it, like a friend breakup is a real loss. So my concept of haunted isn't like necessarily specific to this scenario, but what they said about being haunted, even if you're like seeking out and indulging that haunting, I just thought that was really interesting. Like, I do think while social sites are basically just like mediators here, they're definitely encouraging and like tempting us to lurk. But that does render us kind of passive forever, like change to people who don't really exist in our lives in any real way anymore or exist at all in our lives. And I think, I don't know, I just, it made me think of it like stagnation and like the fact that you can't just like let go. So, like, I don't know. I'm reading Wuthering Heights right now. It made me think a lot about Miss Kathy being let in through the window.
No, I think that I don't think it's good for us to have this like window, I suppose, into people, because I think closure is a luxury and it's not necessarily one we're often or always afforded. I think that can be really painful. It can be really hard to go without. But then I think it's one of those things that you have to kind of accept and come to terms with and find your own closure. And I think that that is hard work to do. And it is much easier to, like you're saying, to just kind of delay that process, mm-hmm. to stay in this in between where you don't really have to accept that someone is out of your life. I mean, every breakup I've ever had, I immediately mute or unfollow or just like make it so I'm not being confronted with the presence of that person, because I know that my instinct is to want to see. And once I see it, I'm going to like want to see more. And it's it, you're curious and your mind jumps to places. But I find it so, so, so helpful to just not, to just cut it off if you can. And to like form, I guess, the closure that it's maddening when you don't get it, you know?
Yeah. And I think social sites know that. Like they know that. They know that our instinct is not to mute or block. Like, our instinct is to want to see. And it, I mean, it's similar to phone addiction in general, just like needing to keep us on our phones. But like, there is just this element of social sites. Like, even thinking about The Social Network, for example, the way that movie ends is with like Jesse Eisenberg's Mark Zuckerberg like refreshing his ex-girlfriend's Facebook page. And it's kind of like this big question mark of like, oh, is this like Pandora's box that he opened really a good thing? You know, is it good for anyone, including him? And I think, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I just think creeping in all its forms, creeping someone before you meet them, I think is, you know, you're getting too much information about them, getting an idea of them. Creeping someone you'll never meet is attaching you to someone that you don't have a connection to, and like making you yearn for their lifestyle in a way that maybe downplays your own lifestyle. Creeping someone who left your life keeps you attached to someone who you should move on from. Like, it does feel like ultimately stalling us or wanting to keep us, it just wanting to keep us on our phones, essentially.
Yeah.
And sitting, rotting inside of our beds.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, social media is sold to us as like this false promise of like being connected to each other. Oh, distance doesn't matter. Whatever. Like, time doesn't matter. Like, all of these things become irrelevant because we can be connected through these devices. Mm-hmm. And while on one side, you know, right now I'm talking to you on WhatsApp, and I haven't seen you in a year, and this has been our means of like keeping in touch, and like in some ways that's, it's like, you know, a great feature of it, but in other ways it's like there's a reason people go in and out of our lives, come in and out of our lives, and it's not healthy.
Well, it also, like, I haven't fully felt the loss of not seeing you for a year because we were talking on the phone, but ultimately like I have not seen you physically, and like I think that realization was really fucking weird. Like, I was like, oh my god, we have not seen each other physically. That's the longest I think we've ever gone without seeing each other since we met years ago, like a decade ago. But I haven't felt that. It's like this false sense of closeness and intimacy that it just doesn't exist, which I guess existed with parasocial relationships too, like that false sense of intimacy.
Yeah. And like, obviously I'm like, you know, if I hadn't seen you in a year and like I hadn't talked to you in a year and maybe we'd just been writing letters, it would have been like this built up thing of like, oh my god. And you know, perhaps when I see you it will be less, I mean, it's still going to be exciting, but it'll be less of like a major event because it's like we've still talked and we've still been able to reach each other.
And I know how you've like physically changed. Like, it won't be that crazy to see your different hair color. Like, it's not. Yeah. It's all quite sad because the ultimate goal is to keep us all not actually with each other. WALL-E style, like that one scene in WALL-E, not to be, we live in a society, but like where the one lady's talking to her friend on her like weird iPad thingy, and then the friend is actually sitting right next to her and they didn't even realize or something like that. It's like a scene in WALL-E. Yeah, I don't know. The goal is to keep us sitting in our beds, and maybe that's going to be the theme of this season, but we're excited to kick it off. It's definitely probably a more serious season in a lot of ways than the last one, but I'm really excited about it.
Me too.
Hee hee.
Should we, yeah?